Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today we have Oliver Ranson-Elliott joining us. He is a physiotherapist from Canberra. He works at Sports Tech Clinic in Kingston. He's also the strength and conditioning coach at Bangarra Dance Theatre in Australia. Oliver comes from a professional dance background, so he danced the Australian Ballet and the West Australian Ballet as well. Welcome, Oliver. Welcome to the Pre-Point Pod. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. So I would love for you to let the audience know sort of who you are and where you practice and a little bit about your dance background and that sort of thing.
Sure. So I started dancing at the age of six. Lots of years of faffing around. Didn't really take it seriously till probably 14, 15, started full-time 16, and lucky enough to get into the Australian Ballet School, and then had a short injury-riddled career with Australian Ballet and West Australian Ballet. In fact, that's why I ended up retiring. I had a labral tear in the West Australian Ballet, had surgery and then failed rehab, obviously reflecting on all the work that Sue Mays has done on all the, you know, the MR series and how she deals with rehabbing labral tears. Makes me think, well, maybe that might have been a different outcome had I known all those things. And even when I was in the ballet school, I had operation on ankles, ostrigonum taken out. Oh, I mean, the other injury I had in West Australian Ballet was pars defect. That was good fun. The advice at the time from the sports doctor was bed rest for 4 to 6 weeks, which is probably not what we would do now. But there was no in-house physio or sort of rehab team or medical team that they have now. And just left to your own devices. So, you know, I went out and found a Pilates studio and sort of did some rehab. And then the first day I got back to the ballet company, they basically pressured me into doing some lifting. So pas de trois, overhead presses. And I distinctly remember at the time saying, yeah, definitely not ready for this. But then having pressure from the ballet mistress and my fellow dancers, I went ahead and did that. And then, the next morning was having difficulty walking, loss of power in my leg, couldn't get onto the bus, and then spent the next few weeks in agony, crawling around the house with a disc bulge. So definitely familiar with the intrinsic and extrinsic pressures that dancers get. Yeah, in fact, I did at uni, I did a little project for ethics and communication where we did, so I approached my old ballet school, Susan Taylor, Terry Simpson in Adelaide, and we used the senior girls and put a question to them, you know, if you were injured, would you tell your, well, actually it was all through SurveyMonkey. So, you know, they could, I was reasonably confident they would tell the truth. And they, it was like, would you tell a teacher if you were injured and you couldn't dance of your own volition? The second option was, if a physio said to not do it, would you tell the teacher? And the third was, if you had a sports physician and a physio, would you tell them? I think one girl said that she would tell without that, and then something like 60% with physio, and then about 80-90% of them would tell the teacher they couldn't dance with, if it was a sports doctor and physio. So it just kind of goes to show that there's so much pressure.
How long ago was this again?
So that would have been 2010-ish, probably.
Yeah, right. Wow.
I mean, obviously it's different now, and I don't know what your experience is, but I think over the 10 years that I've been sort of involved with dance schools in Canberra, that's shifted. And I think a large part of that has been just the communication with dance schools. So when a dancer comes in, well, basically, you know, the parents there, dancers there, this is the diagnosis, this is prognosis. These are the do's and don'ts, right? You've got a hip injury. I just want you to keep your leg at 45, devant, second, derrière. You can go as high as you want, and you can do petit allegro, fine. So they've got a nice little structure that they can use. And that means that the dance school can then plan, oh, yeah, they've got a comp coming up, or, you know, end of years, shows coming up. So either we redo the chore or we take them out of certain pieces. So it's just better for everyone, basically. I don't know, what's your experience in that?
Definitely. I work with sports doctors when I treat dancers a lot. I think that generally once a dancer's had an injury experience and they've had a successful rehab with a physio, maybe things didn't go, you know, the way that they really wanted them to, in terms of communicating with the teacher that time, but they sort of learned along that line that if they do communicate with the teacher, then it results in a better outcome. Then I find if there's a second injury, it's much more automatic. And definitely when I've been working sort of in-house, that's generally the procedure. Like, it's a very clear-cut sort of process that we go through, and there's very open communication with teachers, health practitioners. And I think that's the same with a lot of companies as well. Maybe not so much with younger dancers though, but I feel like as soon as you're employed in a company, there's a little bit more safeguarding. I don't know, like, I think you also work with a professional dance company with Bangarra in Australia, and yep, also with a lot of adolescent dancers in Canberra. So do you notice that there are any sort of contrast between those two environments, or?
I think, Bangarra is its own thing. They're next level, I think. I've been working with Zurich Ballet remotely over the years, and currently doing a little pilot trial to help them set up an in-house sort of, health team, I guess. And really it's I notice it's the senior dancers that are much more willing to, they've got much more agency than the babies that come through. And so having someone advocate for them, I think, is really good. And they've definitely sort of communicated that appreciation of having someone in their corner, you know, just having that separation between artistic staff and the dancer, having that go-between. So it sort of takes it a little bit out of the dancer's control in that sense. So it's like, even Bangarra is awesome. Like, we'll talk a bit about that, but how they run everything is really good.
I'm interested to know how they do run things. So, like, what kind of health supports do they have around them?
Yeah, so the backstory is Daniel Roberts, and who's the ballet master, and sort of runs the show for the dancers, and Michelle Wong, who's the clinical director and head physio of Bangarra. They've sort of implemented this safe dance program, and they've got quite a few things going. That's how I sort of came in contact with them. They visited Canberra and asked if I could help out with physioing, And then later on, they put out a tender for an S&C coach position. I was pretty chuffed and felt pretty privileged to actually get that job. Yeah, so they've implemented that. They've got more recently, they've got a nutritionist on board. So sports nutritionist works with AI athletes and really great coordinating with her, sitting down with her, especially from the S&C role and nutritional demands and what we're doing with the loading. So coordinating that with her has been really good. I think they're probably one of the only companies in the world that provide food for their dancers. I know that last year the dancers were struggling a bit with cost of living. And as a result, Bangara basically feeds them at work. So they've got, you know, rolls and wraps for lunch and bananas and apples and all these healthy sort of foods that they can snack on. And just, I mean, it's extraordinary. Like, I just don't know another
company. It really is amazing. Like, I remember talking about this before. I mean, you know, a lot of workplaces will have tea, coffee, Bickies, fruit bowl or whatever. But it's just going that one step further for basically these athletes, right?
Yeah, we've got peanut butter and Jats. That's what we've got.
I think that's a really good start, peanut butter especially.
It's crunchy though, which can be controversial. But yeah, no, it's been really good working with them. Yeah, it's, well, we started off with working with Michelle. We just wanted to get a bit of a screening thing going. And I don't know if you've read Roald Barr, his little, I think it's 2016, just basically injury, you know, screening is really not predictive of injury. That's not necessarily how we kind of use that, that model. You know, the usual establishing relationship with the dancer, you know, getting some stats that they can see, oh, yeah, my ISO Copenhagen has improved 200%. So it's like a, you know, it's a good motivator for the dancer. Obviously, if they get injured, we know, well, these are the benchmarks. This was the level of strength they had, so this is how we get back to it. And obviously, you know, if there's glaring differences between muscle groups or strength, then we will address that as well. And I mean, I can run through some things that we do for testing if you want.
What would be really interesting to know would be how they work their S&C into their performance and rehearsal schedule, and also some of the, I guess, key I don't know if you're happy to share, like, the key testing outcomes that you use, because Bangara's choreography is very different to classical ballet and even in the sort of traditional sense of contemporary dance, because it's incorporating different kinds of movements that are from traditional Indigenous Australian dance, right? So, yeah, I'm interested to know how you kind of accommodate that.
Yeah, so we, again, they're very lucky in that they get to do their S&C within the schedule of their work, which is something I think reasonably alien to most ballet schools and ballet companies. From my point of view, you know, if you think of any athlete, part of being that athlete and performing on, you know, either a soccer pitch or, you know, wherever, is that they're required to keep their body in good shape and strong, and that's part of the job. And so therefore I feel like companies really should be providing time and paid time for them to do that. That's just my opinion. I know that's maybe controversial, but
I agree. I think it makes sense.
it's logical from an athlete point of view. So, you know, dancers are artistic athletes, basically. We've been doing twice a week classes with them. Typically it's in the morning before they do rehearsals. Basically how I set it up is I try and get all the main muscle groups that I think are important, get a minimum of 10 sets per week per muscle group. That's kind of what the research shows. If you want to get strong and stronger, probably 10 sets is a minimum. The type of things we do, I mean, obviously Bangara, very earthy, very quad down low, knees over toes. Guy would have an absolute field day with them. And definitely I do incorporate a little bit of knees over toes type work, but very careful and controlled. In the screening, we do still screen for things like, you know, single leg calf raise at 60 beats a minute. And I'm reasonably ruthless on that one, in that I require them to, whatever height they can get with a double leg calf raise, they must be able to do with a single. So I kind of cheated a little bit, and I put a TheraBand really, or some sort of tubey band, really tight. And so they have to double rise and just touch it and then remove a foot, and then they have to hit it with the, so it gives them a bit of.
That is very strict. That is very, very strict.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
Well, wow. just for repeatability for me, it's just a little bit more accurate. And I sort of realized this after. So one of the other physios from my clinic is a dance physio. She came over and helped out with screening, and she was getting some fantastic, or more fantastic results with the single leg calf rise than I was. And I think it was just that she was slightly more lenient, you know. But for me, 5 degrees, that's it. You're done. You're off, you know. So anyway, so we do that. It's a little bit less important for them, other than it might be a gross indicator of how strong and stable their ankle is. So I do keep that in there, and we do work on ankle stability for sure. We've got a counter movement jump, and I use, I think it's My Jump 2 app, which has been validated, but not supremely accurate. It can't give you that information that force plates do, but you know, if you're on a budget, $27 versus $6,000 worth of force plates is probably.
I think as long as you have, you know, a measure before, a measure post, and totally. It's like, you know, within participant is reliable. And like you say, yeah. If it's not as though you're screening 100 dancers, like it's just quite a small company. So I think the utility of that practicality is great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you can dive deeper into that in the sense of like, an athlete can jump similar height by cheating strategies, which usually is only picked up really either with slow-mo, but really the force plates are the best for that. But yeah, still for us, it's just keep it simple. It's just getting that picture. What else we do the single leg hop test, so over 40, so that lateral jump test, and side plank Copenhagen ISO. Just have them doing ISO Copenhagen for as long as possible. That's probably my favorite one, and their least.
I really love a good Copenhagen. And actually, talking to Ellen in Perth, who works with WA Ballet, she really likes a good Copenhagen as well. So we must be onto something.
I think so. Well, I don't know. For me, adductor is really important, and I've just noticed over time that, you know, a bit of a hip sort of instability when they get catching in retire, and you do 3 rounds of, you know, 30-second absolutely mashing adductor activation, and then they do the retire and there's no pain, just for me tells me that the adductor is quite important in that hip stability and strength. What else do we do dyno. So I've got the little handheld dyno active force 2, which is slightly better than the original because it gives you a peak and an average. So obviously, you know, they can cheat and they can whack the leg out for a half a millisecond, which gives them, you know, 50 kilogram force, but then the average is 30. So, you know, you can't hide so much with that.
And those dynamometers are nice and transportable, and they're like easy to use. Yeah.
Super good. So we'll do a hip flexion at 90, and I remember doing the hip course with Sue Mays, and just talking about how, you know, dancers can hide that weakness in a bit more of that inner range. So we also do it at 120, depending on the flexibility of the hip. And then that's when you start to see the big differences. You'll see one size, oh, actually that's like, you know, 40% less than your left or something, you know. So that's quite a useful one. We use an adduction, abduction, and then a knee extension flexion. And we are dynoing the shoulders as well. So arm in an abducted position. So imagine your arms resting on the car windowsill sort of thing out to the side, just from that position, just because it's stable. elbow down, and then and
a bit nicer for hypermobile shoulders too.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of upper body work and lifting that they do, so that makes complete sense.
We'll do push-ups to a yoga block, so and pull-ups as well. And then, yeah, that's about it. So we are going to make some changes. This year, we did it four times, four blocks of testing. We're going to reduce that a lot. We'll probably potentially do two, maybe three, but we use Team Builder as our delivering S&C and exercises. And they have built in that. They have their 1RM calculations, and there's a couple of options of people that you can refer to for calculations on that. But as long as you stay on the same one, I think it's fine. So we'll start using that a little bit more to see where the athletes are going, and then have a separate exercise. So it's like a max effort ISO Copenhagen. So it's not a test. It's actually one of their exercises. And that way we can sneak it in throughout the year, because, you just do that once a month. And that way you get a more consistent input of how they're going with particular things. So build the testing within the exercises is kind of how we're thinking about doing it as well, because it's almost not screening, it's more monitoring at this point, like how are they actually going.
That's probably it's probably easier for the dancer to also see the utility of it as well, though. If they see that what you're testing becomes their exercise program and vice versa, then it's not just a random screening that happens and they're like, why am I doing this,
For sure. So next year we'll change a little bit how we're delivering it. We're going to do two sessions still, but it's going to be as one massive group, so working out how to do that's going to be a bit more difficult. Realistically, the exercises I've been delivering is trying to be quite efficient with what you're doing. So I might do an ISO Copenhagen, but then the underneath leg is banded doing hip flexion. So we're getting a hip flexor and adductor. Same thing, I might do a bridge over a box. And so glute hammy ISO plus hip flexor. And I might do a side plank. So glute med oblique and do a hip flexor. So in one session, I'm getting all my hip flexors done, getting my adductor, getting hammy glute. Yeah, so you can kind of be clever about how you implement everything.
Sounds very efficient.
And I guess one of the things first thing I really considered going in there was, I'm going to call it gym intelligence. Like how familiar are the dancers with the gym? What's their lifting technique like? How do they do movements? Some of them are amazing and some of them are less amazing. And so obviously there's an education process, and we'll do different exercises to make sure that they get there safely. Safety profile, high safety profile exercises is really what I was chasing. So we'll do a lot of yield, isometrics, probably incorporating a bit of complex training, so where you do a strength exercise followed by explosive power. So you might do depends on the nomenclature, but basically a HIMA, held isometric muscle action, or a yield isometric. So they might hold a back squat, 40 seconds to start, and then later on as they get stronger, brings down to like 20 seconds with a heavier weight. And then straight after that, within sort of 10 to 15 seconds, I'll get them to do a box jump. So something explosive. So for efficiency, you're packing in, you're making that program more dense and getting more in, essentially.
Well, it's also very functional though, because that is literally what you're doing on stage, right? And in rehearsal. So
Yeah, no, it's been really fun working with them and seeing the huge changes. I mean, some of them improved, 400%, 300% on their testing. obviously, when you first start a program, strength program, just doing anything, you're going to get great results. Where it sort of matters for me is at that more pointy end, when they start sort of reaching that higher limit, how do we safely get them stronger without injuring them? So that's where it gets a bit more tricky.
Also, I'm interested, you know, when they're performing and touring versus rehearsing, you know, how do you frame that differently or
different? This year at the start, I basically did my big macro cycle. And then within that, you know, I had all their tour dates, when they're at the wharf, when are they away, and then built in when I would be loading. So when am I doing my power? When am I doing my strength? When am I doing plyo? And what's the sort of intensity at each stage? And so building my little, my little meso cycles within that. And yeah, essentially, well, actually I did email Adam from Royal Ballet, who does the S&C stuff, but a little bit different for them because they've got such a big company and it's a bit divided. And also you've got different levels. So you'll have the quarter ballet is going to have a much different load than, the more senior dancers. So much more complicated for them to be so individual in their programming. But helpful in the sense that you just got to think about what's their load coming up. And if you can build the S&C load, get them really strong in a period of time where, they're doing something consistent, bit of rehearsals. And then when they're going into performance mode where their hours change, and obviously we know that when you change, when you're getting up and when you're going to sleep, that can really impact your fatigue. I remember reading something that's like when in daylight saving changes, the increase of heart attacks goes up by 24%.
Surprising.
But then when you go the other way, when you get an hour back, it reduces by pretty much the same amount. So, you know, it has a massive impact on injuries and stuff like that. So we reduce the load quite a bit from the S&C point of view in that time. So you just move the needle as needed, really. And the moment that you can get them in that sort of really big block of consistent rehearsal, that's when we absolutely try and push as much as we can, get them as high and as strong as they can. So that way it's just trying to preserve that during the performance.
Do Ben go a tour with any exercise equipment, so gym gear and sort of gyms on location, or how do you manage that?
I think there's going to be a bit of a mix maybe potentially next year, but definitely on tour we've got a little portable Pilates machine. I'll bring a barbell and plates, kettlebells, bands, a box, a bench. You know, you can do actually quite a good workout. Again, on tour, not pushing them too much, just maintaining that basic sort of endurance strength. It's again very lucky that they get to bring all that gear with them. The poor tech crew having to push large heavy boxes around.
I'm sure that a 20-kilo barbell is not the worst that a tech crew have ever moved. That's true,
probably.
There is a feeling of guilt, though. I remember, touring myself with Queensland Ballet at times and trying to put a few extra plate weights in the bottom and things like that, and just being like, oh, the poor person that has to unload this at the other end.
Yeah. Michelle's great. She's got the tech crew doing S&C stuff because they've had a few injuries, back injuries and shoulder and whatnot. So she's got them in once a week doing a strength thing, which is, really good. I think overall, really impressed with what Michelle and Daniel Roberts have done with this program. I mean, everyone at Bangarra is so friendly and so nice. It was I was almost taken aback. It's not just the dancers that are really nice. It's the everyone in admin, super friendly, and just like the whole purpose of everyone there is like to help the dancers. And it's like this kind of circle around them that that try and do everything they can to make life good and easier for them. So it's been really a pleasure to work there. It's a great environment. I haven't really, I just bit of a stark contrast to my memories of what ballet companies were like. There's a lot of sort of genuine love there. Really loving and caring. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think as time has gone on, like more ballet companies have health support, more dancers seeking health support. Like there is a cultural change, but I do think that it sounds as though there are some really unique things about the culture at Bangarra, which is really, really wonderful to hear. And I think it's really nice to hear, you know, that this is what's happening in the professional space.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know also, like, do you sit down with the artistic staff and the dancers together to set goals, or is it more like the health team kind of observe and set goals, or like how do you work that?
Yeah, I think that's something that we'll probably do a bit more as a group with the dancers. How it went this year was a bit more, this is, yeah, within the, so we have a safe dance meeting, Daniel, Michelle and I, every sort of fortnight, talk about who's injured, where they, how they're going, what's where we, how they're going to progress, what are they up to. And from the S&C point of view, it was essentially these are the stages in that whole macro cycle where they're going to be under more load, less load, and then we just sort of plan around that. But I think this time we're going to be much more communicative with them and, okay, so this is actually what we're doing. You know, you've got, I don't know, you might have this particular piece that is going to be much more aerobically demanding or even anaerobically demanding. So we want to get your lactate threshold up, OBLA line a bit higher up. And once they, I think that's going to be better in the sense that once the dancer understands, oh yeah, okay, so I need to be able to run around. And actually in rehearsals, I've noticed I'm puffing and wheezing by, you know, halfway through. If this program can help me not be puffy, more likely to get buy-in. It's all about the buy-in for the dancers, you know, to get them on board and motivated. So yeah, I think just being clear on the purpose of each sort of training session. At Michelle's suggestion is like have, because we've got a massive whiteboard. So I got us a whiteboard last year because I like to put in, I'll do little competitions. So like ski erg, who gets the best ski erg score? And I put up the times and stuff. But I think we'll have it as now on the session, this is the goal of the session. So the dancers can see, oh yeah, we're doing this and the purpose is this. So just being a bit clearer with them.
Best ski erg is also a goal.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I didn't get around to doing it last year, but I'm going to do a little, get them in groups of three and then see who can get 1500 meters the fastest. So you have to kind of quickly swap the next person. And then offer them a cash prize or something at the end, whoever gets the best.
That sounds great.
Really get some motivation going.
We've really dived right into the technical nitty gritty of your work with Bangarra. It's been really great to chat and sort of hear about what happens, you know, on the ground. I have one last question for you. Have you ever worn point shoes, and what are your preferred pair of point shoes?
Have I ever worn point shoes?
Yeah. I ask every guest this question. Even though Bangarra don't traditionally do point work, but yeah.
Yeah, no. Wait, so you're asking me personally if I've worn point shoes? Yeah. I attempted to wear point shoes, but unfortunately my feet are a little bit too big to at least the tallest girl in the company. I tried. It was very difficult. I think they were blocks, obviously, because I think it was Aussie Ballet at the time was sponsoring them. And they were extremely uncomfortable, I have to say. And it doesn't help.
If they were too small, that probably doesn't help. But yeah. Was it for a production or just for
No. This was just for fun, yeah, testing it out. I know that some of the character dancers in particular pieces, ballets, it'll be males playing that role, but they have to wear point shoes. Yeah, my second toe is longer than my big toe, so that is also quite uncomfortable. I know that you have a little putty solution for that.
Sometimes that works. Yeah, I mean, it's nice because you can customize it a little bit, but yeah, it's never easy. And I think often what happens is the second toe kind of curls a little bit to compensate, and then it ends up getting a bit squished.
No, I was never destined for point work, unfortunately.
I don't know that that's an unfortunate thing.
No.
Yeah. thank you so much for your time this morning, Ollie. It's been really great to chat. And
yeah, same to you. Thanks for having me on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.